Blog Talk Radio.
Once a man is glad you smoke like your grandmother.
You underneath your down, and there's no end in you. A shot of fireball, one reason turns it through. A 40 ounce of steel and silver and the actual brew. I'm so bored of doing nothing, but I got nothing to do. So pour us up the Boilermakers, that's around if there is anything. Pour us up the Boilermakers, time to knock the back.
Hey, Turnbuckle Terminal fans, welcome to the show here on another Sunday afternoon. QT and Sign Guy with you as normal. And we want to send our best wishes real fast out to longtime Pacific Northwest star Diafula the Butcher Dabashi, who is recovering from ankle surgery. That's why he was not on our show as scheduled the other day, but I believe he is doing well, so best wishes to him. And without further ado, I want to welcome today someone that has not been on the show until today for some reason, but he's here now. Danger Dean, welcome to Turnbuckle Turmoil.
Hey, guys. Thanks so much for having me, man. I'm glad that we could work it out and glad to be on the show.
Well, we're definitely happy to have you here. And since it is your first time, you're going to get our traditional first-timer question. What led to you getting into the business of professional wrestling?
Oh, man. So I've got an interesting story. Interesting in the sense that it's not traditional where I went seeking a wrestling school or anything like that. I was actually working at a radio station in Colorado Springs, and there was a local indie promotion that was about to start running in the area, and they didn't really have money for advertising, but they decided to see if there was anybody in the building that would be interested in helping out in any kind of aspect. And of course I caught wind of it and I was like, yeah, I want to, you know, help out. What are they looking for? And I was told that we could do whatever we wanted essentially. So I was like, well, I want to wrestle. And so they came up, they came up with this spot for a battle royal that they were going to do where I would come out in the middle of the battle royal and I would just be my, you know, I would play the typical cocky radio guy who just showed up and started running his mouth about all the wrestlers. And then I would get in the ring and then they had a big guy or a bigger guy that would pick me up, Chris Carnage, who unfortunately passed away not too long ago. But he would pick me up and throw me over the top rope onto a group of guys that were on the ground. And that was supposed to be my spot. And I was like, I absolutely love that idea. Like if I got to be in a wrestling match of any kind, like that was kind of like dream come true stuff because, you know, I'd grown up being a wrestling fan. And so I ended up getting to finally meet the promoter face to face. And we had a meeting. It was me, and then there were a few other guys at the radio station that were interested in maybe helping out. And for some reason, this guy singled me out after the meeting and was like, hey, you know, you look like you're really excited about this kind of thing. And he's like, right now I'm looking for a ring announcer. And he was like, so, you know, if you are looking to be a part of one show, we could do the Battle Royal spot, or you could be a part of every show and, you know, you could be the ring announcer. And he was like, in payment, I will teach you how to bump and teach you how to wrestle and all that. So I was like, that seems like a fair trade and sounds like a whole lot of fun. And to be honest, when I first started doing the shows and started watching how these matches were put together and all of that, and watching how two guys who had never met each other could come up with something that was amazing to watch in the ring, I started kind of telling myself, even that very first show that I did, which was in 2008, in Colorado Springs, Colorado, I told myself, I was like, there is no way that I could do what these guys just did. So any, at that point, I kind of had figured any idea of actually being a wrestler, those dreams had kind of gotten squashed, because I had watched guys that I consider superb talent, especially on a local level. I watched them do something incredible to where I didn't feel like I was worthy. But I kind of stuck with the ring announcer thing. I did that for a few months before they started kind of getting me involved in storylines. Even as the ring announcer, I would still involve myself in some of these bigger storylines and all of that, which propelled me as a character. And in the area, being that I was on radio anyway, I was a little more popular than a lot of, like, some of the younger guys that were also starting when I started. So I think that was a reason why they started kind of putting me into those positions. So they kind of slowly worked me into becoming a wrestler before I knew it. I was laden in spandex and having matches. So it was kind of a gradual process, and not one that I sought out, but one that as soon as I got the opportunity, man, I took it for all it was worth and I ran with it.
I don't know if you have come across him since moving to this area or not, but your journey sounds a lot like that of Steve Miggs, who has one of the top radio shows in the Seattle area and transitioned into both ring announcing and being one of the better independent wrestlers here in the Northwest. So if you're not familiar, you should definitely study up on Miggs.
Oh, I have a podcast that we do as well, and he was a guest of ours. So I've actually spent some time talking to him, and I had briefly worked for the company that his radio station is under. I worked for their promotions team before COVID hit. So I had the opportunity to meet him and get familiar with him. Very nice guy, very, very cool guy.
Absolutely, and I think the two of you would make a great tag team or even great opponents with a similar shared history.
I would absolutely be open to something like that, either of those. He is definitely on the top of my list of guys in the PNW area that I'd like to tangle it up with, you know?
I could definitely see that. That'd be great, I think. Now, when you mention your ring announcer days, I understand that you were the ring announcer during the last run of Dr. Death Steve Williams. He was, of course, a legendary figure in professional wrestling. What was that like, being someone relatively new in the business at that point, getting to work with someone of that stature?
truly, that was it was incredible, and that was really the selling point for me. When the guy came around, this promoter, his name is Brandon Bishop, and the company was called Asylum Championship Wrestling. And when he had come around, I had never really heard of independent wrestling on the local level. You know, I had seen some things that, like, they did a viewing of WrestleMania 20 at this sports bar that I went to, and I thought it was just an exhibition kind of thing with the Honky Tonk Man. So I never really thought it was anything more than that. But this guy really introduced me to the world of independent wrestling. So when he was explaining it to me, he was like, yeah, you know, well, on the show, we'll have Dr. Death Steve Williams. And I was like, the Dr. Death, like, I was blown away that Dr. Death Steve Williams was still active. You know what I'm saying? Like, that he was still involved in wrestling in some aspect. And so that was one major selling point, was to hop on shows with him. And really, just to meet him and stuff like that. I never really got to pick his brain as far as the wrestling aspect goes. He was very, very cut off to the people that he, you know, wanted to be, to be around, and he was very approachable. It was just to the lengths of which you could, like, take his time, and I never really felt like I could, I was in that position just being so young. But just having him on the card and being a being a ring announcer and getting to bring him to the ring there, that was just a really surreal moment, just because not only standing in a wrestling ring for the first time, I was also bringing out this legend to the ring. So that was pretty incredible. And the final run, and I believe it was his final title, his final title run ever was with Asylum Championship Wrestling. He ended up beating the champion at the time. It was Franco DeAngelo, who wrestled out of Texas. I'm not sure if you're familiar with him or not, but he was the champion, and then Doc beat him, and Doc became the champion. We had Don Marie on that card as well, and that would be being one of Doc's, if not the last wrestling appearance that he ever made before he passed away.
Now, Steve Williams was actually from Colorado. He was a legendary athlete well before he went to University of Oklahoma. He was very well known in Colorado when he was a high school student and athlete. Were you familiar with Dr. Death via that aspect, or was his professional wrestling career where you were most familiar with him?
The wrestling was definitely where I was more familiar with him. When I was younger, I wasn't really that interested in any other sports. Wrestling was something that I happened to come across randomly one day when I was channel surfing. I was like 11 or 12 years old, and just happened to catch it, and just the theatrics of it and some of the more imposing characters. It was just it was something that caught my attention immediately, and instantly fell in love with it.
Now, in recent times, you have come up here to the Northwest and started with Northwest Pro. You have been on a few shows that they have done over in Idaho at Curly's in Hauser, Idaho. You are scheduled to appear on the next Northwest Pro event there at Curly's, as a matter of fact. And we have Iron Buddha level shocking news here. It has just been revealed to us that your opponent that night is scheduled to be our very own Randy Zellers. Can you give us your thoughts on this breaking news?
All right. I love it. We've been wrestling tag team matches for the last couple months. And we've dominated pretty well there. I'm looking to get my, we unfortunately lost the titles, back in November. But if we're going to do some single stuff, hey, I'm in for it. I'm ready to show the PNW what I've got and what I'm capable of.
Now, Randy Zellers is a longtime veteran. He's over 10 years in the business. You're somewhat familiar with him, obviously, but can you break down to the listeners what you think Randy is going to bring to the table as your opponent and what you're going to have to do to counter that attack?
Well, I think we've seen Randy have a change in attitude. So really, I think what I'm going to have to watch out for is just the way he plays the game, and more specifically, just how dirty he plays the game, because I know he's not coming alone. He's got some assistance. So I know I won't be in there with just one guy. I'm going to have to remember that I'm in there with one guy on the inside, and I'm going to have to take care of what is also waiting outside. So, I'm going to have my hands full. I'll have my hands full on February 27th.
Obviously, coming here to the Northwest, you were well-established as a wrestler when you did it, but things such as styles in the ring, the audience, things of that nature are usually a little bit different anytime you go to a different area. What are some of the differences you've noticed between wrestling here and wrestling in Colorado?
I think really the biggest one and the most obvious is just familiarity. The fans, especially with COVID, when I had decided to start wrestling out here, was right before COVID hit. So I've still been active out here, I haven't really properly gotten to, to get to know and introduce myself to the PNW audience. So I think that's the biggest difference I've seen coming from Colorado and what I had done there to coming out here to Washington, which I'm very anxious to get things going again, because I think what I've got to offer out here on the scene is going to be fun, and I think I'm going to be able to have some good matches with some really excellent talent.
I definitely think so too, but I'm sure you, like most people that are in the wrestling business, have been to a variety of different wrestling venues, because anywhere a promoter can fit a ring and some chairs, usually they can try to have a wrestling show there. Some of the buildings are much better conducive to wrestling than others, but we all seem to have that one favorite arena or building where we go to wrestle. What is your favorite venue?
Oh, man. A lot of the venues that I really enjoyed performing at, they're no longer around. The one that I really miss was the very first one. So Asylum Championship Wrestling used to wrestle at a place called the Phil Long Expo Center. And we would get some big crowds because of what we were able to fit in the building. So, and when I say good crowds, you know, I'm talking independent level. So I'm talking, you know, 400 or 500 people, which at the time was, you know, and still is it's a pretty big draw. So that was one of my favorite places to wrestle. I know that whenever I go out to Colorado, Rocky Mountain Pro, no matter where they're wrestling, they always have one of the more top-notch productions, setups. So that they're always a plot. They're always somewhere I definitely try to visit as frequently as possible, just because of the professionalism and just how they, you know, how they have everything set up, and they can pretty much make anywhere they fit a ring make it seem like a big show production.
A Rocky Mountain Pro, prior to the COVID-19 situation, had become something of one of the bigger independent companies around. They were gaining a lot of steam, bringing in top talent from different areas. They had good television, a lot of great talent. What do you think it was that makes Rocky Mountain Pro sort of a destination place for a lot of wrestling talent?
You know, I would I would credit a few things. One, hands down, I'm going to credit the guy who owns the company, and that's Matt Yaden. Just what he's been able to build over a 10-plus year period with that company has been pretty cool to watch. I was in with the early inception of the company and watched it. It was called something different before it changed to Rocky Mountain Pro. So I was there when it did the transition, and just how he's managed it and how he's managed to continually keep it growing and keep forward momentum, I think is to be credited heavily to its success and why people are drawn to it. And I think the other reason is because of the talent that's produced from there. A lot of the talent that comes out of there, they're really good talent. A lot of them are working down in OVW. They're beginning to start making appearances on television elsewhere. You've got guys like, I just saw him go down there, Balaam Lynx out of Colorado, and another awesome wrestler named Lilith Grimm. She's made a few appearances now, I believe, with OVW. So they're producing some really top-notch talent. And then not to mention, you've got Abaddon from AEW came from there. And then you've got Dozer from WWE. He was also a product of Rocky Mountain Pro and that school. So it's just got a lot of history and a lot of credible history to it. So I think that's got a big, big thing to do with it for sure.
Now on a lot of the shows you were on, at one point they were affiliated with the NWA, which of course is the longest tenured governing body of wrestling promotions. The NWA a few years ago was made up of affiliates of independent companies all over the world. Once Billy Corgan purchased it, he restructured things, and he was making that a very hot commodity at the time that things were shut down. They were on the verge of a major pay-per-view in a building that had been sold out. They were getting critical reviews from, brave reviews actually, from the people that watched the shows on YouTube and going to the TV studios to watch the tapings. What do you think of having been part of the NWA yourself at one point, and what do you think of what the NWA was, at least at the time that things were shut down for them?
You know, when we did it, it was run much, much differently. So, just being a performer, I didn't really see much of a difference. Again, it was just run a lot differently than it is now. The product that they were producing before, was something I'm a huge fan of. I like the studio, the old school feel of the studio environment that they were providing, from the interviews to the matches themselves. I really liked it. I thought aesthetically it just reminded me of wrestling when I started watching it and really started studying wrestling. So a big fan of what they were doing out there as well. Yeah, love it.
Oh, sadly, it looks like the NWA is nowhere near as healthy as it was just a year ago. A lot of their talent has moved on to other promotions. They have some sort of working relationship with AEW, at least for the women's division. It's not producing content on a daily basis like it was in the summer. Do you think that the general idea of the governing bodies in professional wrestling, like your NWA, like your AIWF, your UIWA, can exist in today's climate, or do you think that's something that may have passed wrestling business by at this point?
You know, I feel like just with wrestling and how it is now, I don't know. I think And I can't even speak to anything else because I've never been anything other than, you know, an independent level wrestler. But I mean, I feel like allowing us as wrestlers to be a self-contractor, to make our own money and to pave our own way through it, I think is important. So as far as being governed, I don't know. I haven't actually, like, even as far as like state testing and things like that, this is the first time I've worked in a state that required, you know, your blood work to be kept up and all of that. Colorado is not one of those states. So those things, though, I mean, on that level, I'm very thankful for and I'm happy to oblige. But as far as, I mean, if there was any intervention on making money or anything like that, I would strongly oppose it. But I guess the answer would be, I guess, to an extent, I'm okay with it.
Now, you mentioned the blood work, and a lot of states do require that. Every commission is different, of course. Some states are much, much stricter than other ones. But in the era that we're living in right now, do you think that either the existing athletic commissions or the states themselves are going to put down mandates as far as what promotions need to do as far as health and safety issues? Are they going to maybe be stricter on blood work? Are they going to require vaccination records? Are they going to require sanitation of the ring between matches, anything like that? Or do you think it's going to go back to how it was pre-COVID?
You know, I think that's a good question. It's actually something I've thought about too. As soon as everything starts getting into, you know, action as far as the vaccinations go, would that be something that the states that commission, would that be something they add to the list? Like, you need to make sure everybody is vaccinated, which, I mean, I haven't seen that yet, but I don't know. I think it's, I wouldn't be surprised if that step was implicated, and to what extent people are going to follow it would be interesting. I think anybody that's serious about their career as a wrestler going forward, I think it's important to you know, keep in mind that if you choose to continue, that would be something you would have to adhere to. I'm sure there are people that would oblige. I'm sure there are people that would have their issues with it. But yeah, I think that is something that could be a very stark reality for sure, that we could be required to present a COVID vaccination if we choose to wrestle in states or commission.
A lot of fans probably don't know this, but say 80 to 100 years ago, there was a outbreak of a disease called trachoma, and it was so widespread in the early days of professional wrestling that it is the reason why wrestlers traditionally wipe their boots on the apron before stepping through. That was one of the very few ways the wrestlers at the outbreak of trachoma had to try to keep the ring clean. Do you think that there's going to be a way that not only the wrestlers but the promoters are going to either want to or be required to prove that the actual ring itself is sanitary? I know promotions varied a lot in independent wrestling as to how often the ring was cleaned or not cleaned and that thing. But do you think that'll be changed either because of wrestlers sort of demanding it or commissions or what have you?
I feel like wrestlers, it could be something in demand, and something I'm surprised. I mean, I'd be shocked if it didn't happen on a wider scale. And the promotions that aren't, you know, doing regular cleanups on their rings, I'm thinking, you know, maybe we can start doing that, because I don't think I've seen anybody sanitize their rings before between matches, and I think that's a pretty good idea. But maybe not so much the commissions, but maybe more the wrestlers' preferences. You know, if they were to do some kind of sanitation, and I guess it would be harder to do if you're working on a canvas rather than the vinyl ring tops, where those are pretty simple if you just give it a quick wipe down, where it's not so easy if you've got the canvas. So I guess that would be one of the factors, but maybe I would see more it being more of a wrestler demand than it would be by commission, if I had to guess.
It's very seldom, but I have seen examples of promotions that do try to sanitize between matches, but very, very few and far between, which is why wiping the boots became something of a tradition, because that was wrestlers trying to prove to each other they were attempting to keep things clean. But maybe a new tradition will arise out of that.
Yeah, and here I thought the wiping of the boots was a sign of respect.
It is, but it's a sign of respect showing that you're trying to keep the dirt and the grime out of the ring, because they felt like that was what helped lead to trachoma.
I love that. I think that's such a cool little tidbit. I never knew that, and I love that. I think that's great. Maybe we could... Yeah, maybe some kind of hand sanitizing ritual before we enter the ring, after we've, which I've been guilty of, but it's slapping hands with the fans and stuff, give ourselves a little hand sanitization before we get into the ring.
I'm for that. And we have a game on this show that we like to play. I think you're a perfect candidate. We call it Bring On Detroit, Bring On Defunct. You will receive an option of two things, and the one that is your personal preference is the answer. No right or wrong answers. Are you prepared for Bring On the Choice, Bring On the Funk?
Bring On the Choice, Bring On the Funk, baby.
Drop kick or crossbody?
Ooh, crossbody.
Trunks or tights?
I prefer trunks.
Vern Gagne or Bill Watts?
Bill Watts.
Curling or shuffleboard?
Ooh. That's a good one. I'm going to go curling, man.
Milk or orange juice?
Milk.
Science fiction or true crime?
True crime, hands down, man. I love true crime.
Lumberjack match or blindfold match?
Oh, man. Because I've never been involved in one, I'm going to say a blindfold match.
Pinfall or submission?
Pinfall.
The last one, Jimmy Hart or Gary Hart?
Jimmy Hart. Got to go.
All right. At this point in time, my co-host QT Vokes is standing by, and I know that he has questions for you as well, so I'm going to pass things over to QT.
All right. Sounds good.
Well, hi, hello, Dean. How you doing?
Hey, I'm doing well, QT. How you doing, man?
Not too bad. Would you bear with us and I'm going to try an extension of Bring On the Choice, Bring On the Funk. Two subject matters. Are you ready to play the extended version?
Yeah, bring it on. I love it.
All right. The Grand Wizard or Jim Cornette?
Ooh. I'm going to say Jim Cornette. I'm going Jim Cornette.
Oh, okay. All right. Brook trout almondine or pan-seared Chilean sea bass?
I'm not a seafood fan, so what was the first one again?
Brook trout almondine.
I'm going to go, I'm not a seafood fan. So I'm going to say, which one's the less fishy? You might be able to help me out.
I think it's pan-seared Chilean sea bass.
All right, well, then I'm going to go with the sea bass. I'm going to take your word for it and go with something a little less fishy.
All right, okay. And that brings up the question, were you a big fan of the character sea bass in the movie Dumb and Dumber?
I loved sea bass. And that Dumb and Dumber is one of my favorite movies ever. I remember going to that movie on, like, my birthday, when I was like 14 or whatever it was. And, the scene in the bathroom, I remember laughing so hard. I was crying to the point where I had to leave the theater, to regain myself. So yeah, man, love Seabass.
Yes. Now when you have been on the road with other wrestlers and you have sat in a booth, have you yourself ever thrown a salt shaker over your shoulder and hit someone like sea bass?
No, but I've wanted to.
Oh, okay.
but for my safety, I didn't because, I'm a very non-confrontational person normally. So.
Okay. All right. In your travels as a wrestler, maybe from Colorado to Washington State, have you ever stopped into a restaurant named Dante's Inferno, like Dumb and Dumber did?
Dante's Inferno. No, I don't think I've ever been in a Dante's Inferno. Although, when I did leave Colorado, initially I wound up in Florida, so you can say that I was in Dante's Inferno for about 11 months before I ended up in Washington State.
Oh, wow. Yes, Florida weather. Okay.
Yeah,
okay.
Yeah.
Oh. Well, Mr. Dean, I saw your YouTube video entitled Danger Dean versus Pork Chop Primos, Hardcore and Wrestling 3-8-12. And I noticed in that match, you came out to the entrance music Danger Zone that was featured in the movie Top Gun. My question is, Did you ever see the South Park episode where Tom Cruise is working in a fudge-making factory on an assembly line, and the kids call him, and rightfully so, a fudge packer?
I vaguely remember the episode. I vaguely remember it. It seems like that was a long time ago.
Yes, even Randy Marsh shows up and sees Tom Cruise on the assembly line, and he says, "Wow, Tom Cruise is a fudge packer." And Tom Cruise says, "I am not a fudge packer."
I do remember the episode.
Okay, if you could just watch that as your homework assignment, Turnbuckle Turmoil.
Yeah, I'm writing that down right now.
Oh, very good. Okay. It's wrestling life. Yes. Okay.
Hello?
All right. Well, Mr. Dean, Kelly McGillis plays a civilian astrophysicist in the movie Top Gun, and she's named Charlie. Do you believe she had Miss Elizabeth-like qualities about her? Do you remember astrophysicist?
Yeah, no, she definitely did kind of look like Miss Elizabeth. Is she related to Miss Elizabeth?
Oh, I don't think so. Yeah. Okay. All right. Very good, Miss Elizabeth, Macho Man. Okay. All right. Well, Mr. Dean, Tom Cruise confronted Iceman in the locker room and asked him what his problem was. Iceman, who is played by Val Kilmer, said, "I don't like you because every time you go up in the air, you're unsafe. I don't like you because you're dangerous." My question is, when you go off the middle or top turnbuckle, do you yourself consider yourself safe like Iceman or dangerous like Maverick?
Ooh, I would say a little bit of both. I think I'm safe as far as my technique goes, but to my oncoming opponents, I am very, very dangerous.
Oh, like Maverick. Okay.
That's right.
All right. Very good. Okay. Well, Mr. Dean, if you freeze the wrestling video of Porkchop, and boy, I can't believe it's already been like 9 years, at the 44-second mark, you can see a tattoo on your left shoulder. This is if you freeze the screen. What is your tattoo about on your left shoulder?
Well, the tattoo, when I've got a, my left shoulder is a dog paw. And I had gotten that one because when I was in high school, I had a group of friends, and we used to refer to ourselves as the Dog Pound. And we decided that one day we would get dog paw tattoos, and this opportunity popped up to where if you went to this tattoo shop in Denver and you got a tattoo that was $50 or more, they would give you free tickets to Monday Night Raw. And so the day of, and there were these commercials that ran for it for like weeks. And I decided that the day of the show, I would call, and they said they had one pair left. So I drove up to Denver. I got the dog paw tattoo. I left to the tattoo shop and I went to WWE Monday Night Raw, which I believe it still might've been WWF Monday Night Raw at that time.
Wow. Who was on the opening card, the opening match?
I couldn't tell you. It was such a hectic day. We got there right as the show started. I remember Kane and the Dudleys, I think, coming out. Man, it was, yeah. I wish I remember details from the show itself rather than just me being there in a bloody bandage.
Oh, wow. How much, on a pain scale of 1 to 10, how much pain was involved in the tattoo?
Oh, no, very low. I would say, tattoos, people can say tattoos don't hurt all they want. Tattoos hurt. But I would say how much this hurt was probably a 4 or 5. It wasn't that bad.
Okay, 4 or 5. Okay.
Yeah.
All right. Well, Mr. Dean, at the 1:58 mark of your match with Porkchop, you had the microphone and told Porkchop that you were a big thing in Colorado Springs. Did you know they have the Air Force Academy there?
Yes, I actually used to live and work about 10 minutes away from the Air Force Academy.
Wow, okay. At that time, I believe women were pretty new to the Air Force Academy as pilot trainees. Yes, at that time.
I'm not sure. I'll take your word for it. I'm not that smartened up on what they were doing at that time.
Okay. Well, Mr. Dean, in your match with Pork Chop, at the 2 minute and 39-second mark of the match, one of the announcers said, "Danger Dean seems to be taking a page out of Ric Flair's book there. I think you eye-gouged Pork Chop. Were you a big fan of Ric Flair?"
I love Ric Flair. One of my earlier memories, and it's kind of a funny memory, but one of my early memories when I first started watching wrestling, which when I started watching was right after Hulkamania had kind of gone away. So I had just missed Hulkamania and all of that. So one of the very first storylines I do remember was seeing Vader and Ric Flair. And I remember being so afraid for Ric Flair's safety because of what an ominous character Big Van Vader was. So I remember very early on, Ric Flair was a wrestler that I latched onto and really, really liked.
Okay. All right. Well, Mr. Dean, you had your back turned toward the referee, and Pork Chop took this opportunity to get you in a reverse roll-up, and that led to a 2.5 count. My question is, were you surprised at his opportunity for surprise in seeing that this was his first match? Were you surprised at his awareness?
Yeah, to put it lightly, I would say I was a little shocked that he had that ingenuity and those capabilities within him.
Okay, all right. Well, Mr. Dean, at one point in that match, Pork Chop ran across the ring while you were in the corner and gave you a stinger splash. Were you a big fan of Sting?
Also loved Sting. More so when he came out with the crow gimmick. That was my favorite take on him. I liked the mystery and the build up to Sting versus Hogan. The build up more so than the match, but. Yeah, big fan of the Stinger.
Kind of when he was in his Edgar Allan Poe stage, right?
That's right, his goth stage.
Now, while you were in high school, did you yourself and your group of friends that had the paw tattoos ever go to Denny's and late at night and drink coffee like the goth kids on South Park?
Yes, well, not those that group of friends, but I had another group of friends that also we would go to Sherry's, actually, and we would sit in the smoking section and we would drink coffee and smoke cigarettes for hours and hours and really the waitresses that were trying to make money.
Whoa, okay. Did you have a long black trench coat like the kids on South Park, the goth kids?
No. I actually looked like a Backstreet Boy, as far as my style goes. I was a very confused individual.
Okay, all right, very good. Okay, well, Mr. Dean, what was the name of your high school in Colorado Springs?
Well, I actually grew up in Castle Rock, Colorado, which is about a half an hour south of Denver. So I ended up graduating from DC Oaks Academy in Castle Rock, Colorado.
Oh, okay. Wow, all right. Did you go out for the wrestling team?
No, I never. The very first thing I ever did athletically was professional wrestling. And I didn't even get started in professional wrestling until I was 26. So I was a bit of a late bloomer as far as being an athlete goes.
Okay. All right. Well, Mr. Dean, I myself am somewhat of a video analysis expert in guessing a wrestler's height and weight based on what I see in the ring. And
okay.
Based with what I saw with you and Porkchop, I am now going to guess your height and weight, hopefully within a half inch of your height and about 15 pounds of your weight. Are you ready for my statistical analysis of you?
Absolutely.
Okay. Based on your match with Porkchop, I'm going to guess you're 5'10½" and 198 pounds.
I am actually, in that match with Porkchop, I was probably 190 pounds, and I am 5'9".
Hey, okay, I just barely made the height. I was within 1.5 inches, and I was within 8 pounds.
Yep, no, you were damn close, man. Very good job, very good job.
Well, I got to tell you, Dean, every time I put my streak of nearly undefeated video analysis on the line, I get nervous. You might be my last guess.
Man, that I'm gonna say that's pretty impressive because I mean we can say here right now that you've never met me before, so that's I'm really impressed with that with your analysis, man. Good job.
Oh, okay. All right. Very good. Oh, okay. All right. Well, Mr. Dean, are you still active with Tackle Dropdown Podcast with JD Mason?
Well, we haven't done a new episode here, and it's been a few months now, but I think it's a door that we've kept open if we've got some when we get everything kind of going back up again here in Washington. When everything opens back up, we plan on, I think, the door has been where we can get some new guests and pump out some new episodes when the timing's right.
Well, when you were active, did you ever ask any questions that made any of your listeners hang up?
No. Everybody was pretty pretty good with my questions. I don't think I had anything too incriminating. So.
Okay. All right. Well, Mr. Dean, in our broadcast history, we have had on B. Brian Blair, one half of the Killer Bees. Did you know that his partner, Jumpin' Jim Bronzell, was a state high jump champ when he was in high school?
I did not know that, but it doesn't surprise me given the nickname there.
The nickname, yes. Okay. All right. Well, Mr. Dean, we also had a seminal moment in our broadcast history was when we had on heavyweight MMA champ Dan the Beast Severn. Now, I did some research into Dan the Beast Severn, and in 2010, he was in a film called The Beast. An action movie called Dan was in a movie called Kill Factor. It was directed and written by Leo Fong, and the plot is about a detective on the track of a serial killer in Los Angeles. Dan Severn in 2010 also played himself in a movie called Tetherball. The movie was directed by Chris Nicken, and it's a sports comedy movie. And the plot of the movie is that three friends decide to start a tetherball league and wind up becoming amateur athletics with more booze, babes, and balls that they can handle.
Sounds like my kind of movie.
And in 2014, Severn acted in College Fright Night, which is a comedy horror movie directed by Brad Leo Lyon. And Dan the Beast Severn plays a police officer. I also found out that Severn had a long history in Greco-Roman and freestyle wrestling. His amateur wrestling back career started in high school, and according to many witnesses, he was an absolute machine at 191.5 pounds. And he won both sports national championships in 1976 and was named Outstanding High School Wrestler in the Nation. And even before his 18th birthday, he was already ranked in the top six in the nation in the open division and placed in the Olympic trials. He was also a two-time All-American at Arizona State University. But Mr. Dean, what I was stunned to find out, and he told us this on our interview with him, that when he makes an appearance at Arizona State University as one of their more famous alumni, he has to stand in the lunch line like everyone else. Danger Dean, I am asking you at this moment if you will join myself, QT, and Sign Guy in getting Dan the B7 front of the line privileges in the chow line when he goes to Arizona State University. Will you join us?
I am in, man. If the Sun Devils need to let him to the front of the line, I say. They're the Sun Devils, right? Is that the Sun Devils?
Sun Devils.
Yeah. Let Dan to the front of the line. Don't make him stand in line like a peasant. He's deserving of the front of the line for sure.
Oh, this is huge. Okay, not only did I guess your height and weight almost correctly, you yourself have committed to getting Dan the B7 front of the line suit privileges. I'm very pleased.
That's right.
Oh, okay. Well, at this time, I'm going to turn it back over to Sign Guy. He may have a question about your merchandising, maybe. Thank you, Sign Guy.
Sounds good.
All right. Well, if I didn't before, I'll have one now. Danger Dean, what is the merchandising game like for you at this point?
Well, I've got a whole bunch, actually. I've got everything really you can imagine. I've got T-shirts, hoodies, women's clothes, kids' clothes, fanny packs, mugs, stickers, face masks. I've got everything. Pretty much everything that you could want and fully accessorize yourself. I think if you bought like a T-shirt or a hoodie or something like that from every category, I mean, you'd go a whole year without having to change clothes.
That's not bad. Not bad at all. Now, since you've been up here at Northwest Pro, you might have noticed we have a few managers running around Northwest Pro. There's a plethora of them. I'm sure you've seen managers at other promotions in various other states where you've wrestled. From your own observations, who would you say are some of the top independent wrestling managers out there right now?
Ooh, that is a good one. I know that there's a group and I'm going to go back to Rocky Mountain Pro here. There's a group in Rocky Mountain Pro, Three Rings or something along those lines. It's three just imposing different characters, but their manager is Bud Bellflower, and he just has this old timey kind of feel and look to him, and I think it just works perfectly with the faction that he's managing. He's really good. Oh man. Gosh. And that's such a good role too, because man, when you have good managers, man, it adds to that show. There was a guy in Colorado when I first started, wrestling, and he's not active anymore. And I know that like people have urged him to get back into wrestling somehow, but his name was Michael Titus, the Rocky Mountain Mouth, and that guy was one of the best managers I've seen in wrestling, period, not just independence. I think if he would have had a little bit more opportunity, I think he would have really gone somewhere. I think he would be one of the best that I'd ever seen, especially on our level.
Expanding out a little bit, I know that as a whole, the manager role has been severely reduced over the last 10 to 15 years. We're starting to see a few pop up at the national level as far as the big national TV companies, but it's still nowhere what it once was. Who do you think are some of the top managers if you throw everybody in the mix that does the role?
Currently or of all times?
Either way.
I would say currently, it's really hard to deny Paul Heyman, man. He is such a good just good character, a great mouthpiece, and you really just you know that if he's got somebody or he's managing somebody, that that person's career is going to get better, at least under his tutelage. So I would put him as at the top of probably some of the best in the business now. If I'm in the past, man, my favorite manager of all time is Bobby the Brain Heenan. I just thought he was great, and to where he was, he almost had this likable aspect to his to his heel side. He never was a face. He was always just the heel manager, and I think that was something to be respected. And the way he did it, I think, is just unmatched.
Well, we got a few minutes left in the show today, and I want to give that time to you. If there is anything that you would like to say to the listeners, plug and promote anything and everything you have going, social medias, upcoming appearances, merchandise, all the podcasts, your favorite drugstore, anything in the world, floor is all yours.
All right, cool. So, yeah, we talked about merch there just a little bit ago. I've got merch available for anybody to buy. You can go to my website, which is dangerdean.net, and there my whole shop is there, and you can pick and match anything you like out of that store, and also help out a struggling wrestler as well. I've also got a couple podcasts, like was mentioned before, the Tackle Dropdown podcast, myself and JD Mason. And then also, I just started a brand new one. I'm a Denver Broncos fan. So if we've got any Denver Broncos fans that are out there listening, I've got a new podcast called the Broncos Northwest podcast, or the BNW podcast, if you get the play on words there. So you can find the BNW podcast on social media, and that's Twitter, Instagram, Facebook, all at the BNW podcast. If you'd like to reach out to me myself, my personal social media, that's Facebook, Instagram, Twitter, and TikTok, all at the Danger Dean. So if you'd like to reach out and connect, or maybe if you got a spot on your show you'd like to book a dude, we can work something out as well. Just, again, head over to my social media. And the same thing goes with Tackle Dropdown Podcast, at the Tackle Dropdown Podcast. If you just look for us, again, on Twitter, Instagram, and Facebook, you'll be able to find us there as well.
Well, Dean, it has been an absolute joy having you on the show today. I will see you next month when we return to Curly's there in Hauser, Idaho for Northwest Pro. Can't wait to get back in front of some fans there and do what we do. And I will be an avid listener once you and JD get back to doing the Tackle Dropdown. I might even do a dropdown as I'm listening to the Tackle Dropdown podcast.
See, that's dedication, my man. I love that.
It is dedication. Of course, I can't do the tackle part without, like, probably getting a whole lot of heat somewhere. So I'm just going to stick to the drop down.
That sounds good to me, brother.
All right, fans, definitely, if you know Danger Dean's going to be on a show near you, go out and buy a ticket. He's a fantastic performer. You'll enjoy him immensely. One of the best we have up here in the Pacific Northwest right now. So go support him, pick up some merchandise, listen to his podcast, get on the YouTubes and watch what he does. There's a lot up there. And we will be back with you next week. Next Friday afternoon, we'll see the return of Diamond Dan Garza from Indianapolis. And 1 week from this very day, we'll be back with you. Great announcer out of Arizona named Will E. He'll be with us. He'll make plans to be here, and we'll talk to you soon.
Signed at GT. Thanks, guys.
55.